All right, welcome everyone to another deep dive here on the Lex Blood Podcast. Today we're going deep on a Texas case that should be pretty interesting for all you law students out there.
Yeah, definitely.
It's the case of Jeffrey Lee Wood versus the state of Texas.
Okay.
This was a capital murder case from 1998, and it really gets into the weeds on some stuff that I think will be super relevant to anyone studying law right now, like the law of parties in Texas, evidence admissibility. And obviously some of the big questions that come up when we're talking about the death penalty.
Yeah, for sure.
We've got all the court documents lined up. And of course, our expert is here to help us unpack it all.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I guess the place to start is to sort of set the stage right. Like, how did this guy, Jeffrey Lee Wood, end up on death row when he wasn't even the one who pulled the trigger? And then we'll kind of dig into all the legal arguments that his lawyers used to try and fight that.
Sounds good.
So let's start with the confession.
I mean, right off the bat, this is where things get interesting, right? Wood's lawyers argued that his confession should have been thrown out, basically saying it wasn't admissible in court.
Right.
Two reasons for that. First, they said he was intoxicated when he confessed.
Mm-hmm.
And second, they claimed that he asked for a lawyer, but the police ignored him.
Okay, so classic Miranda rights issues there.
Yeah, exactly.
So what did the trial court do with that?
Well, they had a hearing, obviously, and the police officers all swore up and down that Wood was totally coherent, that he understood his Miranda rights perfectly well, and that he never actually asked for a lawyer.
So the trial court sided with the prosecution then?
Yep. And this is where things get a little tricky for anyone who isn't a legal eagle, right?
Yeah, this is where the power of the trial court really comes into play.
Exactly. Like, at these hearings, it's the trial judge who gets to decide who they believe, you know, who's more credible.
Right. They're the ones in the room.
Exactly. They get to watch everyone's facial expressions, their body language.
And that's huge.
Totally. And whatever they decide carries a ton of weight, even when the case goes up on appeal.
Absolutely.
So in Wood's case, what did the appeals court think about all this? Like, did they overturn the trial court's decision on the confession?
Well, they didn't. And that's kind of the point.
Right.
The appeals court basically said, look, we're not here to retry the case. We're just here to see if the trial judge made some crazy error, like a really obvious mistake, something that would make the whole trial unfair.
So they're looking for what's called an abuse of discretion.
Exactly. And they didn't find that here.
So the confession stayed in.
It did.
Okay. So let's move on then to another piece of evidence that was kind of controversial. The surveillance video from the Texaco station where the murder happened.
Right. And this is where things get a little tricky with the rules of evidence.
Yeah. So the problem was that the actual tape wasn't authenticated in the normal way. Like, the prosecution didn't really have the paper trail to show exactly how the tape was handled, who had access to it, and all that.
Right. That chain of custody is really important.
Yeah. And usually you need that to get evidence admitted.
Absolutely.
But the prosecutors got creative, right?
They did. They found a loophole.
So what'd they do?
Well, they called a witness who knew the Texaco station really well, like the layout of the place.
Okay.
And this witness could also positively identify both Wood and his co-defendant, Daniel Renault, on the video.
So they basically used this witness's familiarity with the store and the people in the video to authenticate the video itself.
Exactly. And the court went for it.
Wow. Okay. So for all you law students out there, what rule of evidence allowed that? I mean, isn't that kind of skirting around the whole chain of custody thing?
It is, and it isn't. It all comes down to Texas Rule of Evidence 901, which lists the different ways you can authenticate evidence, you know, prove that it is what you say it is.
Right.
And one of those ways is by showing distinctive characteristics.
Okay.
In this case, the distinctive characteristics were the witness's knowledge of the store layout and the people in the video, and that was enough for the court to say, okay, we're convinced this is legitimate.
Interesting. So they basically sidestepped the whole chain of custody issue.
Pretty much.
But hold on. Wouldn't the witness describing what's on the tape be hearsay?
Ah, now you're thinking like a lawyer.
Right. I mean, the witness is repeating what they saw on the tape, which is technically an out-of-court statement.
Exactly. But the court addressed that by saying it wasn't hearsay because the witness wasn't testifying about what someone said on the tape.
Okay.
They were testifying about what they personally observed on the tape, okay, like Wood and Renault's actions in the store. And that was considered circumstantial evidence of Wood's involvement.
So it wasn't about the truth of any statement. It was about the actions the witness saw.
Exactly.
Clever.
Very.
Okay, so we've got the confession and the video.
Yeah.
What else did Wood's lawyers try to challenge?
Well, there was also this whole thing about some expert testimony and some missing data.
Right. Tell us about that.
So during the trial, The prosecution called in an expert witness, someone who had analyzed some forensic evidence. And the defense team asked for a mistrial because they said the prosecution's expert didn't hand over all of the raw data that they had used to come to their conclusions.
So basically they're saying, hey, we can't properly cross-examine your expert if we don't have all the information they base their opinion on.
Exactly.
Makes sense to me. So what happened?
Well, the judge wasn't having it.
Of course not.
I mean, a mistrial is a pretty big deal.
Right. Like, you don't just stop a whole trial for no reason.
Exactly. You have to show that something went so wrong that it would be completely unfair to keep going.
So the judge basically said, you didn't even ask for a continuance to get the data, and you haven't really shown me how not having it hurt your case.
Exactly. And that's a really important point for law students.
What's that?
If you want a mistrial, you have to prove to the judge that there's no other way to fix the problem. You have to exhaust all the other options first.
And in this case, they could have just asked for more time to review the data.
Right. Exactly.
Smart. Okay. So what other legal avenues did Wood's team explore?
Well, they also went after the Texas death penalty statute itself, arguing that it was unconstitutional.
Whoa, going big picture there.
Absolutely. They challenged the whole idea of future dangerousness, which is a factor that Texas juries have to consider when deciding whether to give someone the death penalty.
So basically, the jury has to decide if the defendant is likely to be dangerous in the future.
Yeah, and Wood's lawyer said that was way too speculative, too hard to predict, and therefore unconstitutional.
Interesting. What else?
They also challenged the anti-party's instruction that the jury gets.
And what's that?
Well, it basically tells the jury that even in a case where multiple people are involved in a crime, they should only focus on the defendant's own actions when deciding if they deserve the death penalty.
So, like, in Wood's case, even though he didn't pull the trigger, they were arguing that the jury shouldn't consider the actions of his co-defendant.
Exactly.
So what did the court say about all that? Did they strike down the Texas death penalty statute?
Nope. They upheld both the future dangerousness factor and the anti-party's instruction.
Wow.
Their reasoning was basically that future dangerousness, even though it's a prediction, is still a legitimate thing for a jury to consider.
Okay.
And they said the anti-party's instruction is there to make sure that each person is judged on their own actions, even if they were involved in a crime with other people.
So making sure no one gets the death penalty just because they were hanging out with the wrong crowd.
Exactly.
Wow, so Wood's lawyers really threw everything they had at this, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. They even brought up an equal protection argument related to the defense of duress.
Oh, right. Duress, like when someone is forced to commit a crime because they're being threatened?
Exactly. And in Texas, the law says that the threat has to be so serious that a person of reasonable firmness wouldn't be able to resist.
Okay.
And Wood's lawyer said that this whole reasonable firmness standard was way too vague and that it violated equal protection.
Because?
Well, they were basically saying it's not fair to hold everyone to this same reasonable firmness standard because people react differently to threats.
Right. Like what one person considers a serious threat might not faze someone else at all.
Exactly.
So what did the court say?
Well, they applied what's called rational basis review, which basically means they weren't going to get too deep into the weeds on this one.
Okay.
They basically just look at whether there was any logical reason for the state to have this reasonable firmness rule.
And?
They decided there was, they figured the state has a legitimate interest in making sure that people can't just claim duress for any little thing.
Right. Like it has to be a genuinely serious threat.
Exactly.
So at the end of the day, despite all these legal challenges, Wood's conviction and death sentence were upheld.
Yep. The Texas Court of Criminal Appeals had the final say.
This case is seriously a gold mine for any law student. It touches on so many important legal concepts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just think about the power of the trial courts, how much weight their decisions carry.
Right. Like how hard it is to overturn their rulings on appeal.
Exactly. That whole abuse of discretion standard is really tough to meet.
Yeah. It's a good reminder that what happens at the trial level is super important.
Absolutely.
Anything else that stands out to you?
Well, the mistrial issue is a great example of how important it is to follow procedure.
Right. Like dotting your I's and crossing your T's.
Yep. Because if you don't, you might lose your chance to make certain arguments later on.
And the whole thing with the surveillance video is pretty eye-opening, too.
Definitely. It shows that there is sometimes multiple ways to authenticate evidence.
Right. It doesn't always have to be a perfect chain of custody.
Exactly. The rules can be more flexible than you might think.
And I think the biggest takeaway for me is just how far-reaching the law of parties is in Texas.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even if you don't commit the actual crime, you can still be held responsible in a huge way.
And in this case, that meant facing the death penalty.
Yeah, it's a sobering thought.
So to wrap this all up, the case of Jeffrey Lee Wood versus the state of Texas is way more than just a murder case. It really digs into the nuts and bolts of our legal system, and it shows how complex these issues can get, especially when you're talking about the death penalty.
And I think it leaves us with a really big question for all the future lawyers out there.
What's that?
Given how much power the trial courts have, and how hard it is to overturn their decisions, how do we make sure that everyone gets a fair shake, especially in cases with really complicated facts and legal arguments like this one?
That's a tough one, and I don't think there's an easy answer.
Nope, but it's a question worth thinking about.
For sure. Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you all next time.
See ya.